Hello and welcome to ASI Cast number 190. I'm Richard Marks, ASI's Research Director, and joining me today live from Stuttgart is Christian Nabel of Global Media Consult. Now we're going to be talking about how Europe needs to challenge US creative and technological dominance in video production and distribution. But firstly, Christian, for listeners who may not have come across your work before, what's the main mission of Global Media Consult?
Yeah, good morning, Richard, and thank you for having me on this podcast. So at Global Media Consult, we are actually a boutique consultancy, and actually I celebrate 20 years of doing this kind of consulting in October this year. So it's quite some time that I've been in the industry. I'm in the industry for 30 years almost. And what we try to do is basically help our clients to navigate this ever-changing industry. And I usually refer to our industry to an expanding universe, and you keep on seeing new galaxies, new stars coming up. And very often you don't know, is this just a signal out there or a radio noise, or does it make sense? So what we do is we work with our clients to navigate this expanding universe, to understand all these trends, to understand the disruption in the industry, and making very operational sense of it. Because there is lots of hype out there. And what we work with clients on is like, does it make sense for your business? Or how do you react to these trends? And this even goes down to helping them launching new products, assessing their current product portfolio in terms of the TV industry, and seeing how you can twist it, how you can reposition it, or how you can enter new markets.
Now, one of the things that you've been posting about recently, we came across a particularly interesting post that you put on LinkedIn, an article about your concerns about the creative dominance of the US when it comes to broadcasters and video production, and the need for European content makers perhaps to step up, be more self-sufficient and more collaborative. Do you want to expand a bit on that?
Yeah, certainly. It started to become a little bit of a pet project for me, or obsession almost, to talk about this. And it was actually triggered a few years ago when I was invited to a thought leader call at one of the major international industry conferences. And the idea was to have like 20 people in the room that look at the global TV market and what are the trends out there, what are the things out there that shape this market. And when I looked into this room, it was like out of these 20 people, only 4 people were non-Anglo-American. And 2 out of these 4 actually worked for American companies. So the whole perspective was very Anglo-American, very American. And I think, you know, having been in this industry now for 30 years, that has been a dominant perspective on this market. It was almost always the US perspective. And I see an end coming to that, and this change now has 4 reasons, and I call it the 4 M's, and almost like the apocalyptic writers. It was all the 4 of them that basically give an end to the Hollywood dominance. First of all, the first M is the monoculture. I think over the decades, the industry was shaped by a US monoculture that we always thought, okay, the way of storytelling, the content, how things are being made is the American way. And I think everyone was looking at this as the role model. And what we see now is more like a multiplayer environment, more multicultural environment, where all of a sudden we realized, oh, even a production from Korea could be interesting to watch. A TV series from Spain becomes a huge hit. And this is breaking up how we see this culture of television, and it becomes really a multicultural environment. The other M is the moguldom, that the way television and global television was operated was very much this classic Hollywood mogul flying into Berlin, making the deal, and flying out. And this deal was all about conquering this market, colonizing this market, and the all these kind of U.S. mogul empires looked at the markets out there only as affiliates, as colonies. It was a very centralized perspective on the market. And this is changing now into a more multiplayer market. And I find it very interesting that actually an American company is very successful with this multiplayer approach, namely Netflix. Netflix really gives a lot of power to their local businesses. And the local businesses can, commission local productions for the local market. And this is a difference to what other companies did. I think it was Disney that only after, I think, 50 years in the market here, finally decided to commission a local TV series in Germany. And that's also a shift in how the business is structured and the business is organized. And then there are two other M's that I find very important. And the one is like what I call the matrix and models. We tended to look always at the US as the role model. We looked at what matrix do they use, how do these matrix play. If you look at LinkedIn, your feed is full of graphs about the market. And when you look at the data, it's US data. But this data and these metrics don't apply everywhere. The model, how TV is done in the US, is different from how TV is done in Germany or in Nigeria. So we need to kind of liberate us from this fixation on this US model and US metrics and find our own really meaningful measures. What's working in your market? What's the important measurement that you measured success? What's the model that's working in your market? And not, focusing too much what's working in the US must work in the rest of the world, because this cookie cutter approach is not working any longer. And the last M is about message. So over the last decade, since World War II, I think, we have been exposed to this message and messaging coming from Hollywood, that it was the American way of life, the values they depict, the values that they want to teach us. And now the world is falling into ideological blocks. And lots of people think now this messaging coming from the US doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't reflect my values. And let's be honest, let's look at what's happening in the US in the last couple of months. These messages might be hypocritical, because the other M is now the big elephant in the room, is the M, make America great again. So the messaging in the US will, that's my opinion, very soon change. We will not see lots of golden girls anymore. We will see more last man standing. We will not see Modern Family any longer. We will see Little House on the Prairie. So that's where people in the world, in the rest of the world, say, this message coming from the US is not what I want to see on my screen. It's not what I watch. It doesn't reflect my values and my world. So basically, these are the things where I see a shift in the market, and where it's actually a call to the arms in Europe, in other markets, to find your own path and not following the US model all the time. To create more independence on big tech. And I think, we see how EU is trying to regulate that already. We see now initiatives in Europe that we say, okay, let's find our own tech solution to get independence. And what we see around the world is find our own storytelling, find our own local productions, find value in our own culture, and bring this more onto the screen.
There's an awful lot to unpack there. It's absolutely
Okay, yeah, it's
a lot, fascinating, absolutely fascinating. It's going to be interesting to sort of dive in on some of the points that you raise and see if I can come up with some additional M's to add
Yes.
to your list. But Yeah, I think it's just by coincidence. Yesterday, Alan Volker's a respected US TV commentator actually posted a very interesting blog about six ways in which US television is totally different to the rest of the world, and why again we need to be a bit careful about summarizing what's going on in the US and kind of projecting it onto what we're doing. You know, there are obviously lessons to be learned, but there can be an inbuilt assumption. One of your countrymen from RTL was at a recent event and was actually saying, as an aside, that we should have a perhaps a European version of LinkedIn, because so much of the content is being, particularly in our area, which is media, data and research, is being analysed in a US perspective. But I don't quite see how that would happen. I think some sort of LinkedIn version of Brexit would be a very bad idea. But what it's getting to the heart of is this, I guess, that monoculture point that you were making. Just pushing back on a couple of points. There is something implicit in what you're saying, that the societal and political turmoil in the US that may have an effect on the relevance of the content is somehow permanent. I know there are a lot of people hoping that this is a 4-year aberration and that things will get back to normal. Is that naive thinking, do you think? Do you see this as perhaps more of an underlying trend towards US content becoming less culturally relevant? I suspect you might say it's been going on a lot longer than the last few months.
I think, and as you stated correctly, one of the specialties that we work in, and Global Media consists of a couple of industry veterans, and many of us come from a TV news background. So we already saw this shift in the news in the US, how a different messaging in news and how news are generated and consumed made a shift in the messaging as well. But I'm pretty sure sooner or later, and probably sooner when we think, the current US government will put more pressure on Hollywood to change its messaging. You see all this discussion around DEI, a topic that's also very important to me because I think diversity is very important in our industry. And what I think and is one of the things I learned is like if you want to navigate the future, it helps to understand the history. It understands where you come from. Because if you don't understand where you come from, you go into circles. And being German, I'm maybe very, very aware of our history and learn from our history. And I see things happening in the US that happened in Germany 100 years ago. And we know all where this led to. Where the government exercised a lot of influence on the media, and maybe that's why I'm oversensitive to little trends and little developments that become larger now in the US. And if we see how the government exercise pressure on a couple of industries at the moment, I'm sure the industry will cave in. Because in the end, it's for them about money. And if there is the pressure to produce more conservative content, we will do because that will sell or that will be allowed to put on the shelves. It could be interesting whether we look more differentiating at the markets and say, okay, we produce content for the US, but we produce a different content for the rest of the world that might be a little bit more liberal or a bit more diverse, which I think is maybe something that Hollywood studios should consider. And but my thinking is more like that others will go into this void, and it could be Europe that is the market that benefits from it, and production companies from Europe that create a little bit more content that resonates with the rest of the world, because the world is diverse and people love diverse content. And Netflix is the perfect example with the type of content that they put on screen.
I mean, this does tie in also to the announcement a month or two ago that Trump made about tariffs on US companies making content in Europe. I mean, the degree to which that is enforceable is going to be interesting. But it clearly is a concern there that not just that companies like Netflix are commissioning external production companies from Europe to give them content, but also that American production companies are making James Bond films and Star Wars films in Europe.
Exactly.
So there is a challenge there. I think also it's funny you mentioned Little House on the Prairie, which, as you know, they are about to relaunch and remake, and that's a program that I loved as a kid and read the
Me
books,
too, I admit,
but could be seen in a completely different cultural context now, in the context of, the way in which America is headed in that yearning for a past that may not may resonate in a completely different way to how it did
No, and
in the
I think
70s.
another show that will be interesting to watch is I'm a big fan of Western movies, but modern Western movies like Talk, Quentin Tarantino, and like I love Yellowstone, and because Yellowstone is like a, it's actually a sociological, critical, very critical of the society if you really look at the story and how this country life is depicted, and I think this kind of Western will also vanish, and we will see probably also a remake of Bonanza and Shiloh Ranch and like the good old Western times, and where right was right, and the bad guys were usually the Native Americans. And
So in terms of, I mean, we've talked a bit about the nature of American TV. It's harder to talk about the nature of European TV because obviously it's multicultural, it's diverse, there's lots of different cultures involved in that. But I can't think of an M word, but there's probably a fifth thing I'd add to your list, which is the whole area around subtitling, dubbing, etc., particularly subtitling, and the degree to which it may be more practical for European content to circulate around Europe and further afield now in different languages, because particularly younger people are so used to subtitling now, often on content in their own language, because they're used to flicking through TikTok feeds where subtitles are almost compulsory nowadays. And then I think there's probably advantages, I'm loath to mention the AI word, but certainly technology is making translation, subtitling, and even dubbing a lot more practical for content to travel beyond borders, I think.
And you're right, and we work also with a lot of clients on making sense of AI and really operational sense and developing very feasible AI strategies, especially also in TV productions and with TV channels. And one of the first things that everyone jumped onto is, okay, it's now much easier to dub a production and buy a foreign production and dub it easily. And everyone is still learning, so we are not perfect yet. But being perfect, I think, was always the aspiration of European television and European production. And I think that's also a big difference of European television versus US television. We are used, even on free-to-air, to watch very high-quality television. And that's also due to the fact that we have things like public service broadcasters who really have high standards of productions, and so our producers and our productions are usually very, close to perfect. And when we look now at dubbing and using AI at dubbing, we look for the perfect solution, and It will never be there because dubbing will never be there. But on the other side, we see a training effect of the audience. The audience got used to very high quality dubbing. And maybe we need to retrain them to say, okay, well, the content itself is good. So don't, expect a perfect dubbing, work with subtitling, it might make sense. And we see markets like Eastern Europe who could educate their audience to accept subtitle, to accept a lower quality of dubbing, but at the same time allowed them to put a more wider variety of content in front of the people.
I mean,
And
that's going to be interesting to track because that does vary quite a lot by countries. I think we've discussed, we've chatted before, Germany, France very much used to the concept of
Exactly, yeah.
shows
And
being dubbed, but Scandinavia, UK, much more wanting to hear the original actor. So it's going to be
exactly,
interesting to
yeah.
see any
And
route that develops.
in that context, there is actually another development that I find very interesting is one of my other pet topics is talking about the aging society. And if you have an audience that's becoming older, they might actually want subtitling, because they have maybe hearing problems. And there are now solutions out there, actually AI solutions, and a company that I work with has developed a very nice solution to animate subtitles, to make them express emotions. So there's a whole inventory, a whole kind of space on the screen that we don't use yet smartly enough. And then if you look also at the type of people that get older, it's my generation. We all speak English and we want to now train our brain. And I hear people that want to learn a foreign language and purposely watch a TV show or a TV series with subtitles because it's for them a way of learning a language and training their brain.
Yeah, there's a running theme in the UK. I don't know if you have it in Germany, of people absolutely complaining that modern TV series, you can't hear the dialogue because it's being
Yes.
drowned out by the sound effects and particularly the music, when in fact it is perfectly mixed, but most people's TV sets are using built-in speakers, which are pretty crap, and
Exactly.
they're not listening in 5.1 Dolby surround. So as a result, people, the number of people I know who say, "Oh, I just put the subtitles on all the time now," not because they're deaf, just because of the way TV is being mixed, produced nowadays. It's an interesting phenomenon in terms of the points you've raised about content and the need for, particularly, I guess, for collaboration across Europe. One of the things that will concern me when we come on to what you described as the moguls, the big tech element, is has Europe just left it too late? I mean, there is such a dependence on the global tech companies for the obvious things, the YouTubes, the Facebooks, but the less obvious things like cloud architecture and systems that we know that there's a lot of talk going on the political arena about the need for Europe to step up, as that phrase goes, in terms of defense, in terms of becoming more independent of its reliance on the US. Partly because the US doesn't want to fund, partly because there's doubt about whether the US is actually a reliable partner anymore. But how can that realistically happen when it comes to the way that video is distributed? Could there ever be a European YouTube, or is it just too ingrained into our system now?
When you mentioned our friend at RTL talking about having a European LinkedIn, I thought, okay, we also need a European YouTube. And I think there were talks like 20 years ago to do that. And I think it's not too late. Because if you look at many markets in Europe and you see how YouTube is being used, it doesn't have a brand in itself. So I think, especially And this could be very much driven by public broadcasters. If like the EBU with the public broadcasters together would go out there and say, we do an open source platform, a video platform that everyone can access. And if we look at more public-private partnerships and bring major European commercial broadcasters on board, that's a massive marketing machine to promote such a platform. And people, people don't care about the technology. They don't care whether the video is on YouTube or on another platform. For them, it's the way, is it easily accessible? And is the content resonating and relevant for me? And so I think it's not too late, but it's actually now the right time to do it and think about it and really think about what other things do we need in terms of tech to get independent of big tech. At many of the broadcasters use the cloud service of Amazon. So that's another thing to look at. The other thing is like how heavy do you rely on social media to promote your content and as part of your marketing campaigns, or a couple of components that you have to look at. But in the end, it's all tech, and with the right investment, I think it's doable. But I might be naive. I'm not an engineer.
I suspect it probably is technically doable. The question is, someone in their 20s who's had YouTube for their whole life and is just used to it as a default for where they go to access content, what's going to be there? I think when we had an interesting debate on our last regular podcast between Evan Shapiro and Ian Whittaker about whether broadcasters, primarily in the UK and the US, to your earlier point about Anglo-American access, should be putting their content on YouTube or not. And in the UK, we do have BBC iPlayer, ITV Hub, Channel 4, catch-up service that have been trying to get those youth audiences for over a decade and still are struggling to get people to move from YouTube. So there is that temptation to a certain degree of, if you can't beat them, join them, that young people just aren't sufficiently motivated to seek out a broadcaster service.
So I don't know much about the UK market in detail, but I follow this whole discussion about YouTube and you have to be on YouTube. And I'm all in because that's when we talk to clients, we look at a whole portfolio. And I'm always saying content is like water. It always wants to flow to the ocean eventually, an ocean being the audience. So it finds its ways to and its path to go there. And I was always a big promoter of using all platforms that are out there. So of course, as part of your distribution portfolio, you should include something like YouTube. But if you look also at YouTube usage and who's using it and for what purpose in many markets in Europe, I think it's a debate about a very tiny part of the market. I just looked up for other reasons the data in Germany in terms of YouTube consumption. And even amongst younger users, it's going flat. But at the same time, what you see is that linear has actually grown a little bit in terms of consumption of younger audiences. And that has been driven that you have more streaming services that have linear channels. And you have like fast channels, and all of a sudden, young audiences who never thought about watching linear television start watching linear television. It's a novelty almost for them to use linear television. And instead of debating whether you should be on YouTube or not, I think the really more important debate is should we have something else aside of YouTube that is a more independent platform. And you don't want to put all your eggs into the basket of the YouTube empire and of Google. So the debate should really be the question that you ask, should we have a European and an independent solution? And on the other side, I think it makes sense to address a little bit of an audience segment in that market. Commercially, it's incremental revenue. It's not as big as probably people think. The same is about fast. And again, it's like where something that's worked and happens in the US is perfectly well for that market, but where you have to really question, is it a strategy that also works here?
Oh, that's just wondering, as a way of perhaps summing up, because we've covered a lot of fascinating related topics. But you work with broadcasters, so perhaps possibly put you on the spot. Let's imagine that you are the CEO of a commercial broadcaster in a European country. What would you be doing tomorrow to as the first steps towards making this happen, towards creating more independence, more shared content production, more technological independence? What concrete steps would you be looking at?
There are examples and steps being taken out there. Like in Germany, the public broadcasters, they announced that they launch a platform that's open for other broadcasters. So that's what I would do. I think we really need to go out of our silos and think more in terms of collaboration. Think more about pan-European collaboration. I would look at M&A activities. How can I grow to find the muscle? I would look at a room and a space and a common ground that I could even find with my competitors to tackle that market. Because the threat from the outside, from the big tech, is bigger than my ego as a CEO. And if I want to preserve my business, if I want to preserve the local production and the way we still tell stories, I need to look at collaborating with even my competitors in the market. And if we find enough partners to join that initiatives, it can create a very strong proposition, both commercially as well as for the audience.
Well, certainly collaboration is a theme close to our hearts at ASI, because our annual event, which is taking place in Copenhagen this November, is where people who are competing against each other, whether they're broadcasters, research companies, media agencies, come together to actually look at what shared challenges they have and how they can collaborate. So that's quite a good note for us to end on. But thanks for making the time to speak to us today, Christian.
I'd like to add one more thing in terms of collaboration, also coming back to this idea of a local LinkedIn. I created actually this community called The Other Screen, and it's an online community dedicated to professionals in the TV industry, and it's considered to be a safe space where we can have actually exactly this discussion of collaboration, where we can talk about the pain points and come together to find solutions and our own path instead of being always told by others what path we have to follow.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes if you're
Certainly
curious.
would love to.
Keep an eye out for that. And I'm sure this won't be the last time we'll speak, but in the meantime, thanks for your time today,
Thank you
Christian.
very much for having me, and it was fun talking about these topics.